Let's just figure out what happens when we start the podcast.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Bob Alberti. Bob's show, Hardwired, opens on Thursday, and we talk to him about the process of writing this show and what it's all about.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Well, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Molly Glover.
Oh, I thought it was going to be me.
I know. Usually I
You looked right at me and you said Nick Glover.
Usually I do Molly first. Okay. Usually I start with Molly. But this time I do
Take
not.
That.
We are also joined by returning guest, friend of the show, Bob Alberti.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Bob.
They can't. This is delayed.
I waved.
But, oh, okay.
He did. He waved at our audio audience. Charm.
Yes.
Right. Audience.
Hello, audience. Hello. I didn't wave. So, you probably thought I did.
Yes. Dressing up as Bernie Sanders again was not necessary then?
No. No.
So, missing the white hair.
So we brought Bob on because he has a play opening this week, which if you are not in the Twin Cities, which is our home. Base, you will not be able to see. But I think it's an interesting show and an interesting topic to talk about. So, hey, Bob, you wrote a show called, you co-wrote, right?
I co-wrote
a show called Hardwired. That's Why don't you tell us a little bit about that show?
Well, Hardwired started with an idea of Susie Becker's. She had an idea for a fringe show in which all of the performers did nothing but sit at computers for the entire show, and everything they did was displayed on screens over their head.
Hmm.
Which sounds like a fringe show, but doesn't sound like a really engaging BLB comedy.
Yeah.
And so...
Agreed.
That was the germ of the notion, and of course... we had to take it and turn it into something rather more palatable for a regular audience. So Hardwired is about online dating. It's about two people who are going out, and they broke up and had kind of a bad breakup. And then 5 weeks later, their roommates are sick to death of them and just tired of them moping around.
So were they living together or anything? Or they hadn't gotten to the living together part.
Okay,
so these are roommates they previously had.
They had
are now dealing with their breakup fallout.
Yes, that's
sure.
right. Moping around, eating a lot of pizza and things like that. And so one of the roommates, played by Jakey Emmert, who has worked with Fearless on many things in the past, his character Danny sets up an online dating profile for his roommate and says, "Here, I even connected to somebody. Just go talk to them. Get out of yourself. Go do something."
Yeah.
And that's where the comedy begins.
Oh, cool.
So it's about online relationships and online dating.
And it is also about, in sort of the messagey side of things, it's about the way in which technology can get in the way of actual relationships. Hmm. And so there's, you know, I've written two plays now, and the first one had a message about openness and casting, you know, casting people who would otherwise not get roles into roles. The message in this one that Susie and I wrote is about sort of the way technology can help and hinder and largely hinder relationships. Some of the reasons for the breakups that we see in flashbacks have to do with sort of people burying their faces in phones when they could be instead talking to each other and stuff like that.
Okay. And, yeah, you have this... one of the things that I think is great about the show, it's a really tight cast, only four people, I think you know, really small, manageable cast. It's about a same-sex relationship, which is, I think, rare. Not as common as it should be.
Well, and that was the deliberate choice. We started from the beginning picturing this as a same-sex couple, but nothing about the relationship or its problems has anything to do with them being a same-sex couple.
Sure.
These are just two people who happen to be the same gender having a relationship. And I really, really feel good about that. I really, really like the way it's just, this is a relationship. The fact that it's two guys has nothing to do with it. The fact that they're constantly on their phones and not talking to each other has a lot more to do with it.
It could have been gender blind casting.
That was sort of the point of my prior play that I did, Principia Discordia. And yes, you could cast this play completely gender blind. If you were to put this play on again, the names are not gendered. The roles are not specifically gendered. There is a brother-sister relationship. It would be very easy to tweak that into anything else.
Sure.
That's about the only gender specificity that there is in the show.
Yeah, I find when I'm writing... what I think about when I'm writing a lot is if I can make a role non-gender specific, then I will. Like when I did Jenny Bandage last year, I mean, there were a bunch of characters that were specified in the script as male or female, but I told the director, look, it's we just have to change a name and a couple of pronouns, mm-hmm. and this character could be male, or this character could be female. And I said, I really feel like if you can provide a director with more options, one of the... We mentioned a little bit in the last episode that one of the things I'm looking at doing this year is writing The Thing, the musical for mm-hmm. Fringe, and doing a really serious take on the material.
The Thing.
The Thing.
John Carpenter's
The Thing.
The horror movie.
Musical.
The musical. And one of the...
Not satirical parody of it.
No, but an actual, like, serious musical...
I want to play the upside down decapitated head scuttling around on crabs.
Well, see, and I've got an idea about that. We can get into that later. I've got an idea how to make that shit work. But one of the things that I thought about in doing that is if you do it straight up John Carpenter, it's all male. It's mm-hmm. all men. And one of the things that is true when it comes to theater is the more women you have in your show, the better options you have, because there are more women who are actresses and there are fewer roles for women. And what occurs to me is if you write that show without any gender specific information, it can be any mix of men and women that you want. Mm-hmm. It can be all women. It can be some women. It's because none of those characters, none of their actions and none of what they do is dependent on their gender. You can do
just as long as MacReady is a badass.
Well, as long as MacReady is a badass, but once again,
they all go by last names too, so it doesn't because it's like military kind of base stuff. It doesn't matter. Yep. Yeah.
So I think that's it's something that as a writer I wish more people would do. You know, just working in theater, it is, as I said. There are a lot of women who are in theater, and there aren't enough roles for women in theater. And being able to write something where it's like, well, if I have 20 women show up and five of them are amazing, and I have five guys show mm-hmm. up and I don't want any of them, well, then I'm fine.
Right.
You know, I can cast whoever I want.
Well, and if your listeners don't recall, Principia Discordia featured a cast of two men and two women who were randomly assigned to roles during each performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm on the same page. I think that the sort of cultural habit of casting, we must have a handsome young male hero and an attractive young female heroine, that's really 20th century. Let's get with the program and cast the best performers and not worry about those particulars.
Yeah.
Was there anything, like, so the idea and the fleshing out, I mean, you and Susie have both, obviously, I mean, you're both, you know, you're not young kids, so you've had a lot of relationships in your life.
Did you just call me old?
No, because you're not.
You just called me old.
No, but like,
you called Susie
I'm trying to think, like, I mean, you've both been in, you know, she's not with the, you know, her child's father, and you recently went through, you know, like a separation and
almost a divorce.
Yeah. And I mean, do you feel like that helped color that idea of being, I mean, do you feel like you both have experience in the online dating world of today? Or, I mean, to be able to write true?
I can't say I have a lot of experience in the online dating world, but... certainly when my wife saw one of the rehearsals of the show, she came away with it saying, I think we've said some of those same things to each other. So, you know, certainly our relationships have informed the writing that went into the show.
You did, if I'm remembering this right, I think, didn't you and Teresa meet through, like, basically, like, snail mail,
yes,
Tinder?
We met in an online forum before there was online. That is to say that there was a newspaper called Dye's Meet People. And if you wrote a 40-word advertisement, you could place an ad for free. Anyone who wanted to respond to you had to write their letter on paper and put it in an envelope with two $1 bills and mail it. And then they would take the dollar bills out, put it in another envelope, and forward it on to the recipient.
So that you didn't just have your address, yep.
Yep, and I answered two of those in 1987, and I ended up marrying the person that answered the second one. Got engaged 5 months after we met.
That's crazy cool.
We've been married for 26 years now.
That's how I found my the roommate that tried to kill me. It was a roommate service that you would go in and you would fill out a piece of paper and they would enter it into an ancient computer that ran an algorithm with a bunch of other people's information, just like those old matchmaker dating site things. Those
you would check the box that said yes, I like psychopaths.
Nope, I was 19 and they matched me up with I went to St. Kate's. This girl had gone to St. Kate's.
My wife graduated from St. Kate's.
She was 26 to my 19 and I guess they didn't realize all the problems she had. When I first moved in, she like took out a bag of all her medications and was like, never touch these, and told me that the reason her other roommate moved out was because they'd had a fight that ended, and all she would say is, ended very badly, but luckily only one of us went to the hospital. And it was like, what? Which one? we lived together for a few months, and she started accusing me of all sorts of crazy things, like leaving the sliding glass door unlocked on purpose so that she would get raped. And then one day I came home from work at Barnes & Noble, and she told me that she had tried to kill me the night before. She'd stood over me with a knife and then my cat woke up, so she didn't kill me. But she thought that I should know that the sound of my voice made her want to kill me. I was like, okay.
I can sympathize a little bit.
Yeah, everyone says, ha, 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 very funny. But I took her to the hospital, and I got a Bader-Meinhof warning when they let her out. So it was pretty crazy.
You got a what?
Bader-Meinhof warning is what they have to, by law. They have to call you and tell you if a person who has, while in the hospital or jail, made threats on your personal safety, when they are being released, they have to let you know. And they have to give you like 12 hours or 24 hours warning so that you can, in my case, move out of our still shared apartment.
It's so you have time to go buy a gun in America.
Of, yeah.
That's,
yeah.
12 hours? Oh, that should be enough time to go buy a gun.
But that's Susie, I'm assuming, has she done any online dating stuff at all? I mean, did she...
I am much too wise a man to comment on any of Susie's dating habits whatsoever, but I'm sure that that it has informed some of the play.
So you guys co-wrote the script.
Yes.
And I've done some co-writing. What process did you guys go through to co-write?
We used the delightful Google Docs, actually. We did a lot of sessions writing together in person. And we would tend to brush it up using Google Docs interactively over the internet. The method by which we wrote the initial scenes was kind of fun. We would just sit back and riff on scenes, and half the time we were just floating ideas at each other. And we'd start writing them down, and there, scene done. Many of the scenes just fell out naturally from our sort of adopting the roles and then sort of improvising the commentary. Susie has a really good eye for contemporary language. I tend to use phrases like 23 skidoo and the bee's knees. And she you know, buffs that up into an on fleek is the latest.
I was going to ask you, what is the modern vernacular for bee's knees?
On fleek.
On fleek.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know what it means.
The fact that we're using it in this room means it's no longer actually.
No.
A bunch of gentle users.
A bunch of old white people. Now commenting on last
that's
year's.
The youth of America just burnt their code book because it's been crashed. It's been cracked.
Oh, and I had a question. I just lost it. Process of co-writing, you know, can be challenging. Did you guys find any times where did you start from an outline?
Well, that's my strength. I have a good sense for story structure. And mm-hmm. so I knew pretty much, especially when you have four characters inside of 1 hour, mm-hmm. That imposes a certain structure on what's going to happen. And so there are certain requirements. If you have four characters, all four of those characters have to interact with each other. If you have a connection where two of the characters don't talk to each other in the play, there's a good question of why you have those characters in the play. So all four characters have to have relationships with each other. All four of those relationships have to go through some sort of transformation. Each character has to go through some kind of character development. And meanwhile, the plot has to move from the beginning to the end in a fairly clear fashion. And so laying out sort of those requirements, it was pretty much a challenge just to hammer everything into the hour's time. It worked pretty well.
Okay. And you've written a show before. To my knowledge, I think this is Susie's first, isn't it?
Or has she written? I can't speak for her. I believe she has written other things, but I would have to defer to her. Yeah.
I've known her a while, and I don't remember. It may be back in high school or something, but yeah. I don't know that she's written much more than that.
Well, one of the ideas that persisted from her initial idea for the Fringe show is that this show also has a multimedia element.
Okay.
And so while the characters do not simply sit at laptops and type, they actually get up, move around, and talk. We have a display overhead that shows their setting, where they are, whether they're in a given apartment or at the Stone Arch Bridge or at a pizza place. Mm. And then at any given time, if they check their phones, their cell phone appears on the screen. And then the messages they receive pop up on the screen, and their responses also on the screen.
That's very cool.
I just finished the scripted display of that multimedia today.
So a significant portion of the dialogue is actually projected.
You could run the entire play without the multimedia. Uh-huh. We don't want to make the show dependent on it.
Right.
On the other hand, the multimedia is basically another character. Mm-hmm. And some of what happens is kind of crucial. Being a comedy, there is the confusion and the misdirection and people confusing each other for other people that takes place, and some of that does take place on the screen.
Mm-hmm. I like the way there's a few pieces of media I'm thinking that have used incorporated like cell phone screens or text messages or whatever into them to great effect. The first one that comes to mind is Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way the text messages kind of like wistfully like pop up
mm-hmm.
and disappear, or even where they appear
yep.
on the screen is pretty great. And then Kieran Gillen's comic, Young Avengers.
Yeah.
It's like a teenage group of, you know, misfit superheroes off on their own adventures. And there's every single issue starts with, the recap is done by people posting on Twitter and like retweeting back and forth
about how excited like, they are about what they heard and
like, yeah, even like non superhero like people, bystanders who may have seen
right.
something, you know, posting on their mm-hmm. Tumblr blog
yep.
about it and stuff like that. And then there's some of the communication between the heroes and that is done in text, in a text and picture media.
There's a video that was sent to me by a friend of your show, Megan Culverhouse,
mm-hmm.
About that very topic, the integration of modern technology into the video display and how some people do it right and some people do it wrong.
Yeah.
The person who produced the video was very positive towards the way Sherlock does it
mm-hmm.
And likes the good integration of it. I'll try to send that link along.
Yeah,
that'd be great to watch.
It's a great video about that, and I certainly made a point of watching that before putting together this presentation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. There's the challenge of that multimedia aspect, but I like it because, you know, since part of the play's commentary is about, you know, the way we interact with our phones instead of interacting with other people, you know, that character is really kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the times when we see those characters sort of disconnect from each other
yep.
and connect with their phones instead.
Yep.
So I think that that's a really important part. But are you, you know, the show opens, so Our episode is going up on the 5th mm-hmm. of January. The show opens on the 7th.
Correct.
You got a little bit of a tricky schedule because you've got 2 weeks and you've got Thursday night and Saturday night shows.
Yes, we originally were told that the show would premiere for the Spring Fearless show at the end of January, which we thought was a little early for spring, but that's fine. And then we got the January 7th debut date, and we're like, how is the 7th the end of January? We said as we panicked and rewrote our schedule.
Well, you know, unfortunately, when you're using somebody else's theater, you got to work with
what
they
do.
Have.
That's right.
But so it opens. It opens on the 7th.
Yep. 7th at 7 p.m. The 9th at 10 p.m. The 14th at 7 p.m. And the 16th at 10 p.m.
So Thursdays at 7 and Saturdays at 10.
Correct.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
Nicely summarized.
Yeah, a little bit of a tricky schedule, but hopefully, you know, some of our listeners, most of you don't have anything going on Thursday nights anyway, right?
So, I like the Brian Lake Bowl. It's a nice theater.
Brian Lake
Bowl
is one of my favorite theaters to see theater at too. I just love. And not just because of service at your seat during the entire show, but just in general, I like the stage. I like the
good cider.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are at least you and Susie are familiar with the space.
Oh, yeah.
And the green room and all of it.
Yep.
You were writing with that in mind.
Certainly, we understood the limitations of the size of the stage. At one point, I went over and paced it out, so I knew how much space we had to work with. It's good that we have a small cast. One of the ways we saved on clutter and stuff is that we're using the multimedia to project our sets.
Yeah.
So when they're in a given apartment, you see the apartment projected on the screen above them. So we don't have to bring in sets to say this is this apartment or this is that place.
Microsoft Surface stuff on the way.
Yeah.
Who's directing?
Projectors and cameras.
Susie Becker is our director.
She's the director? Yep. Excellent.
Yeah. She has been wrangling our cast, and we're in the final 9 days. We have our tech rehearsal coming up. It will have already happened by the time this airs, so we're we're getting there.
It's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a really, I think, strong show concept. I think it's going to be a good show. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm probably going to check out rehearsal later this week, but I strongly recommend everybody check this show out. I think it's important to encourage new voices, you know, and Suze and Bob both, this is not necessarily their first rodeo, but it is an early rodeo for them.
Well, and we have a phenomenal cast. I mean, we've got Matt Alex, Spencer Faust, Suzanne, sorry Suzanne, I'm dropping your last name because I'm tired, and Jakey Emmert. Mm-hmm. Suzanne was in Duck's performance.
Yeah, she was in Caucasian
Dress. Pandas. Okay.
Yeah. But they are phenomenal. They keep, they riff a lot of the show. You might not see the same show twice
because that's cool.
They're comfortable enough in their roles that they can semi-improvise some elements of it. And some parts of it just have us in tears during rehearsals. So I hope that it conveys itself to the audience that way because it's really funny.
Awesome.
Matt's been a busy guy with performances this month. Last
Suzanne
month, this
Cross?
Month.
I don't know.
Cross, anyway. Sorry, Susan.
I know Matt was in... Get Thee Behind Me, Santa, the Philip Andrew Bennett Lowe thing, mm-hmm. and then another show, and then this, and... Yeah, just his December and January.
Matt Alex, you know, again, this is mostly for Twin Cities listeners, but he is he's a really talented guy, and I think it's nice to see him finally get some stage work mm-hmm. because...
He's got the time for it right now.
Yeah. But that's not why he should get the stage time. He should get the stage time because he's really talented. So.
No, I mean, we had a conversation about it. He said that since I've got this time on my hand, I've had this excuse for so long not doing so many things I'm interested in because I'm, you know, of work or whatever. And now this enormous time sink is gone, and I'd be auditioning for as many shows as I can and do as much as I
until I have to get a regular job again.
Just kind of a really upbeat and positive way to look at a bad situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So we need to move on to five questions.
Five
questions.
Oh, you had one job.
Bob has been on our podcast before and answered our original five questions. Now, normally, being his second time, he'd ask us five questions, but we have five new questions. So we just get to ask our five new questions, and Bob doesn't have to do any fucking work at all.
That's good.
So, Molly, why don't you start us off with question number one?
Question number one, what is a movie that you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Oh, I haven't seen that
yet. Ben Stiller's Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It is an underrated comedy. I've watched it enough times that I can see the holes in it that cause it to be somewhat underrated. Its cinematography is superb, and the soundtrack is really excellent, and the show itself is very good. I enjoy it, so I watch that whenever I can.
Excellent.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either, and I wanted to. So. Well,
it's a story that basically says that if you take chances and go out into the world will be waiting to welcome you.
Hmm.
And that is a message that I enjoy hearing. Also, it's filmed in Iceland, and I've been to Iceland a couple of times, and I'm gaga over the place. So I enjoy any chance to take a look at it.
It's based on a book or a series of books,
It's based on a comedy short story.
Okay.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which was I reread it. It's very short. You can find it online. And this is basically the story of that character's grandson.
Oh, interesting. It
has almost no relationship to the original concept.
All right. Question number two. What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
I would have to say my partial responsibility for the Techamel Foundation, which is the executor of the intellectual property of the late Professor M.A.R. Barker. He produced a game called The Empire of the Petal Throne that was the first role-playing game setting ever sold. It was the second product sold by TSR right after Dungeons & Dragons. Basically, they'd sold a set of rules. Now they were selling, here's a place you could go play this set of rules. It's based on South Asia and Southeast and Mesoamerica, the Inca and the Aztecs and the Mayans, but projected hundreds of thousands of years in the future on an alien planet. And it's a mix of magic and magical technology, you know, the sufficiently advanced technology that is indistinguishable from magic. And after gaming with Professor Barker for about 22 years, as he was failing, he set up this foundation to take care of his IP for him after he passed on.
Smart.
We have been re-releasing. This year we re-released his first novel, Man of Gold, which you can now buy on Amazon. First time back in print since the 80s. We've re-released the source book, which is the set of rules released in the 80s, and we have a schedule of further products that we're going to be releasing. And you can find out all about it at techamelfoundation.org. And one
Techamel
of these days...
Foundation.
Yes,
one of these... T-E-K-U-M-E-L?
T-E-K-U-M-E-L foundation.org.
Very cool.
And one of these days we'll get our 501c3 stuff filed, and then you can actually donate to us, too.
I remember at one time at the studio when you were giving us a little tour, you have, like... you can only be described as like artifacts from this game, like a hand-drawn globe.
We have a hand-drawn acrylic globe that Professor Barker put together. We have his original typewriters that he wrote on. We have his Apple computer, which we have managed to restore all the data from so that we can pull up his novels in the original Mac-based, Apple-based word processing software that he wrote in.
And then print it out on a dot matrix printer?
We could.
Oh, dot matrix.
5 hours later. All right. Yeah. Question number three. What mythical being or deity do you wish was real?
Ooh, that one's caught me unawares. What mythical...
Or supernatural or deity.
Magical.
I'll cop out and go with the doctor just because I wouldn't mind having somebody show up with a time and space machine and saying, hey, let's go for a trip. That one would be fine with me.
I think it's kind of presumptuous that you would be one of his companions.
Oh,
you're an American. Not very many Americans have traveled in the TARDIS.
Interestingly,
not zero.
I'm a very British American, as I have discovered through Ancestry.com this year. I have ancestors who left France to invade England in 1060.
That should please him. He likes when people invade England.
Yes. Well,
oh, no, that's like the opposite of what he likes. question number four. Say religion is gone. What is now the biggest problem that faces humanity, or that humanity faces?
The biggest problem, I would have to say, is... And I'm sorry to sound like Bernie Sanders here, but economic disparity. And the two reasons I say that is because it's tempting to say racism, but in our present culture, racism is masking that economic disparity and actually being inflamed to distract the middle class from noticing that they're being ripped off by the 1%. And also because overpopulation is a big problem, and the only... workable solution for overpopulation that has ever been demonstrated to work is economic well-being. When you have economic well-being, first world nations actually experience declines in population because they don't have to have huge families in order to guarantee their futures.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we could spread the wealth out, we could arrest population growth and start to address some of the big problems. But when 0.1% of your population are a bunch of pathological hoarders who've selected cash instead of newspapers to hoard, then you have a problem. And, you know, history will out. It will repeat itself until we catch on to the fact that this always works out the same way, and it's not good for anybody.
And the biggest, one of the biggest tricks that they've pulled to me is that they have convinced the people like us and poorer, middle class and lower, that you don't want to vote for taxes that affect the super rich, because someday with hard work and ingenuity, that could be
so
you're voting against your own interests.
Temporarily inconvenienced millionaires.
The concept that I don't care how hard you work, you could not become the top 0.1% of America. You cannot.
You're not
through hard work alone, period, end of story. It is that level has to be inheritance at this point, in terms, at least to start.
Because what about Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg?
What about exactly.
Anyway, all right.
We all agree on that. That's two guys.
Yeah.
Anyway. and it's been 35 years, and wages for given positions in the country have only gone down.
Yep.
So
also, by the way, that's two guys.
Yeah, two guys.
Yeah.
Two white guys.
Yeah.
As I used to say, there is exactly one black billionaire in America, and her name is Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so proven wrong.
Question number five. What is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is, "The good and great must ever shun that reckless and abandoned one who stoops to perpetrate a pun," by Lewis Carroll in his poem, The Three Voices. And interestingly enough, I owned this comic book that I found in the 80s, that someone had turned this poem into a comic book with the drawings by Tenniel, who's the same guy who did
The Woodcuts for Alice in Wonderland. Yeah.
And I had it for many years, and then I stumbled across a poem called The Two Voices. And I can't remember who the author was, but you'd know. And it was like Yeats or somebody of that nature from the 19th century. And Carroll's poem, The Three Voices, was actually a satire of Two Voices.
Oh, that's great.
Which made it much funnier to read. And when I had my website in order, I actually had the two up next to each other where you could compare them. But yes, it's from a satire of an ancient morality poem by...
That's great. Carroll.
This book about eating babies isn't very entertaining at all.
I'll make it about a pun.
Yeah.
It's one of the earliest examples of Poe's Law.
Poe's Law.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You can't tell the satire from the mm-hmm. real thing. Yeah. That's great.
Okay, good. Well, Bob, thanks so much for joining us.
Yay, Thank Bob.
You. Hardwired opens this Thursday, the 7th, at the Bryant Lake Bowl in Minneapolis. See if you would be interested in going to see that show.
And you can still order your tickets online, listener.
You can also call if you ever, for any Bryant Lake Bowl show, if you don't want to pay online fees or whatever, you can call them, give them a credit card number over the phone, and you don't have to pay any service fees or charges.
At least 24 hours in advance.
You have to call the day before. You would have to call by Wednesday for Thursday and by Friday for Saturday.
It's so convenient. Yep. It's the best way to do it.
So, yeah, so we are theater people, which is why we occasionally...
Theater people!
Occasionally tell you to go see theater in the Twin Cities. Again, apologies to those of you who are not from the Twin Cities and are like, fuck, I can't go see the show, and it sounds very interesting.
Get in a car, asshole.
Yeah.
Or a plane.
Get in a plane.
But, if, you know, maybe...
Get in a car, plane.
Maybe if you have thoughts... Maybe if you have thoughts about online, about the way we tend to interact with our phones rather than interacting with each other.
It's called fubbing, by the way. I found that out recently.
That's a word?
That's a word.
Awesome. That's a hip young word.
When someone is on their phone and you're like talking to them and maybe they aren't listening to you at all and you can tell and that is you're being fubbed. They are fubbing you. It's phone snubbing.
So
fubbing is the bean's knees.
So fubbing.
Excuse me.
The bean's knees.
The bean's knees.
So what you're saying is fubbing isn't very on fleek.
Fubbing is not on fleek at all. At all.
I don't even get what's
come to Hardwired and find out how fubbing can make you cray.
What is going
and
on
your
right
bae
now? All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Will walk out the door to go so fub that's... another.
All right, that's our podcast.
Fub not, lest he be fubbed.
Something about dab? I don't know. Whip nay nay? I don't know what's happening.
Oh, this should have been over 5 minutes ago. That's our podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. We will catch you next week. Bye.
Bye. Fub.
I didn't have time to come up with a clever outro because I was too busy playing Angry Birds on my phone.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I get the words butt sex ballet in my head a lot.